Hi, I'm Robert F., and I'm an addict. Speaker statement. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program, which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is a possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories, because we all know what it is like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope. I'm Robert, and I'm an addict. And first, I want to thank God for, like, never giving up on me, for, like, loving me in spite of what I was doing to myself and others, for always believing in me when I didn't have any hope. You know what I'm saying? For being there listening that night when I was sitting on that curb praying to something that I didn't even believe in, saying, please just help me get off of this little white substance. You know what I'm saying? I want to thank God for putting my sponsor, Andre F., in my life, who has been there lately some nights on the phone when I was locked up in so much pain that I couldn't even speak. And he just listened, and just knowing that his spirit was on the other end of the line helped me get one more day in this process of recovery. You know, and like, I'm not going to come up here and share the basic text. Any 30-day parakeet newcomer can do that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to share a bunch of theories. I'm going to share me and what the program of Narcotics Anonymous has done to change my life. What it's done since that minute that God let me free off of that curve. You know? The topic is steps 10, 11, and 12. And I may hit the topic and I may not, because I'm not here to be a service to the programming committee. I'm not here to make a tape. I'm here to be a service to God and to the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and like, and able to share what I'm recovering from, how I'm recovering, I had to share what I'm recovering from. You know, and like, I'm going to take a risk and say I recovered from the dope the minute I put it down, because I ain't had to pick it up since December 30th, 1997. On the morning of December 30th, 1997, I threw my straight across into the parking lot of the projects and took my ass into treatment to get my enablers back. See, because at the end of my road, it was 25 degrees outside. It was 20 degrees in my house because the lights were cut off. My family would come by and feed my dog, but they didn't want to fuck with me. They would wait till my car was out of the driveway before they'd come by and take care of my dog. Man, thank God for loving God, for a God that can set me free from all those things that have held me hostage for so long. You know, when I was a little bitty boy, like, an uncle of mine pinned me down to my grandmother's bathroom floor and did things to me that no little boy should ever have to go through. He did things to me that, like, cut off my ability to feel and deal. You know what I'm saying? He cut off my childhood. And I couldn't tell. Man, I was stuck holding a lie. I had to act like I was all right when I wasn't. You know what I'm saying? My mother used to beat me and lock me in dark rooms, man. She used to throw me downstairs because she didn't know how to deal with an unruly, mentally tortured child that didn't know how to get free. You know, and that, as a result of having to live with that, see, I went to this place and they told me that, like, God protects his children and he punishes those people that harm them. Where was God, man? Where was he to protect me? How come he didn't punish him or her? So when I got here, man, I had a 30-year resentment with God. And I didn't want any fucking thing to do with him. You know, from that moment that shit happened to me to torture my soul, like, I all thought God was out to get me. You know what I'm saying? And through the process of the 12 steps, let me say today, God is my best friend. God is my source of power, my source of existence. Everything that I have in my life comes from God, you know. And when God speaks, I have to be obedient, you know. And like, man, I'm going through some shit in my life that I really don't want to go through. See, when I came here just to stay clean. I didn't come here to work the steps. I didn't come here to get better. I just wanted to put the dope down and leave it down. For that matter, I still wanted to drink. But I knew if I drank, I'd pick that other shit back up eventually. You know, so like, I followed some suggestions because I didn't want to get put out of treatment, and they told me get a sponsor, and I went to a meeting, and there was this big 6'6" black dude with a bright yellow and blue Nike suit on. He had a gold one-year medallion around his neck, and he was sharing his ass off in the podium. And, like, they told me get somebody had something I wanted. And after the meeting, all these little fat-ass blondes came up to him, you know, and I said, okay, that's my sponsor. I want that yellow Nike suit. I want that gold one-year medallion, and I'll take two of those blondes right there. See, and let me say, in sponsorship, God does the choosing. We just do the asking. And the reasons why we choose ain't really the reasons why God chooses. Because let me say, that first sponsor, yeah, I got the yellow Nike suit. I got the medallion. By the time I got to the blondes, I didn't want them. I had my own. But the reason God sent me there was to help me get over that 30-year resentment with God. See, because that sponsor had a God big enough for me and about 3,000 other people. You know what I'm saying? And I worked the first three steps with him. And the first step, I admitted that I wasn't God. See, because I've become reliant on myself and my own powers. And that's why I kept waking up powerless, you know, in situations that were beyond my control, from picking up the rock to the girlfriend leaving me to whatever. You know, running my own life was killing me. And then the second step, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And at first, it was Narcotics Anonymous. And then it was different things, and I challenged God, and I challenged God to let Tennessee win the national championship, and a year later they did. You know what I'm saying? But the first moment that I really started to believe that God had my best interest at heart, I had about 90 days clean, and I was staying in a guy that had HIV's house that had 4 or 5 years clean right in the middle of the ghetto. And I was in a relationship with a girl that was supporting my habits of shoes and money and all that kind of stuff that we substitute when we get clean to fill up the hole. And like, we got in an argument one night, and I said, F you, I'm going to use. And I walked off the back porch and I stepped towards the dope boys who were on the opposing corner. And as I stepped off, for the first time I prayed. Since I'd been clean, and I said, God, you better do something right goddamn now, or I'm fixing to use. You better change the way I feel. And I kind of blacked out, man, and I came to in the four corners of the street right in the cross. And like, it was raining just on me. And the dope boys were looking at me like something fucking crazy was going on, and it was. But from that experience, I got some humility. I'm talking about I realized that I was important enough for God to pay attention to just me. I realized that God could meet my needs. You know what I'm saying? That God cared. And that was the beginning of this beautiful journey. You know, and then like in three, I made a decision to trust this power. You know what I'm saying? Even though I didn't know what it was, I made a decision to work the rest of the steps. I said, I'm going to try the 12 steps, and then if that doesn't change things, then I'm going to use. Let me say it was a setup because it's changed some things. You know what I'm saying? I did a 4-step, and I went on the inside, and I found out exactly who I am. You know, and I found out what was mine and what wasn't. You know, and like through doing that, like I started to gain some power. And I started to gain some trust in God because there were some nights when I was laying in the bed all by myself in the fetal position that the only thing that could hold me was God. You know, and the pain made me pray. And then like in the 5th step, I finally got honest with God even though He already knew and told Him what was going on with me and who I was and what I needed help with. And then in the 6th step, I came to realize that God could help me with more than just using dope. You know, I recovered from using dope a long time ago, but I got a lot of shit I still need to recover from, you know. And then like in the 7th step, I became dependent on Him to take care of my defects because I didn't have the power to change me. And who I was hurting folks. And then in the 8th step, I had to call on this power just to get humble enough to write the list. You know what I'm saying? And get in the right spirit so that I could make these amends. And then in the 9th step, trust me, it took all of God to get me through that. You know, a couple big amends pieces, and I'm doing this so I can lead into 10, 11, and 12. Like, after I got clean, there was this girl in active addiction that, like, really wasn't an addict that I used to date. And after I got clean, I went up there one day, and we used to play this thing called slap and fuck, where, like, she'd pick a fight. I'd talk back, she'd slap me, we'd tear her clothes off and get at it. You know what I'm saying? Some are sicker than others, you know. But like, I went up there one day and we did the deal and like in the middle of having sex, like she was crying. And I didn't know why she was crying, you know what I'm saying? And I was so self-centered and selfish, I went on and did my thing and went on, and the next week I went back up there again, and I said, why were you crying last time? And she said, because I was trying to be faithful to somebody else. And I realized that I'd done the same thing to her that God, or that my uncle had done to me. Took her body without her permission. You know what I'm saying? And my mother, so like, one day I'm standing at the cooler at MAPCO getting a Pepsi, and there she is, and it had been 4 years since I'd seen her. You know what I'm saying? And I was in the middle of my 9th step. And she said hi, and I said hi, and I said, I need to go have coffee with you. We need to have a talk. And she said, cool, you know. I guess she thought we were going to fuck. Actually, after I made my amends, she asked if we could, and I said no. But I went and sat down with her, and I said, you remember that time we had sex and you were crying, and you told me you were trying to be faithful to that dude? I said, I'm sorry that, like, I took your body from you without your permission, you know? And then, like, my mother, through a 9th step, I went and sat down, and I looked her in the eye, and I said some things, and made some physical amends and looked her in the eye, and she told me some things. And it's funny how God always gives you the peace that you need to make something possible. See, because about 2 weeks before I went to make amends with her, I was so full of resentment with her that, like, I wasn't willing. And my dad just happened to be by one day, and we were talking, and he was telling me about a time that my mother's mother, he brought her home late, and my mother's mother beat her down in the floor in front of him. And what that did was that allowed me to see that she just did what she was taught. It wasn't her fault. You know what I'm saying? That really wasn't who she was. And let me say, 2 Christmases ago, I spent the first Christmas I have in 15 years with my mother. And she got to be a mother and a grandmother. I got to be a son. You know, we got to be a family. The program of Narcotics Anonymous gave me that back. You know, my amends with my dad
he just said that I was the best man. Keep going to them meetings. That was repayment enough. You know what I'm saying? Because he remembers when I used to go to his house and steal shit when he was out of town. So, like, through doing all those previous 9 steps, like the 9th step says, that we're no longer held hostage to the past. We're free to dream and chase the fulfillment of our dreams. Our life is spread out before us like a limitless horizon. I can go anywhere and do anything, and if I'm in the right spirit and I take the God of my understanding with me. And the 10th step is about maintaining the freedom and pursuing my dreams with the right motive and checking myself before I wreck myself. Because I can't forget, just because I've worked 12 steps doesn't mean that I'm not still human and that I don't still make mistakes. And let me say, I got in a relationship with a newcomer. She had about 8 or 9 months clean and she used. And I stayed in the relationship and I had this little voice inside of me telling me, just hold on, I got something good for you. And she used again and she went to treatment. And all my friends and my sponsor and everybody was saying, man, just let go. Get out of the way, you're going to kill her. You know what I'm saying? And like this little voice, see, because I started to build that fucking relationship with that power. And like this voice inside of me was saying, just hold on, I got something good for you. And she got out of treatment, and with her having about 24 days clean, she went to the doctor because she thought she had something wrong with her, and it turned out she was pregnant. Did I say I wanted to be a father with the girl that I took the sex from, and God wouldn't let me do it because I was still in active addiction? I always wanted to be a family man. You know what I'm saying? I always wanted to have little ones running around the house because I was raised in a big family. And it just never seemed like the dream would happen for me. You know, and like, I hung on. She got pregnant and we had a Down syndrome scare. And like, we went to the doctor and he said, your baby test positive for Down syndrome. And like, I went to see my sponsor and my sponsor said, do you trust God? And I said, yeah. And he said, it'll be all right. And I said, but, and he said, there's no buts with God. You know, and it was like 10 days before we could get the test back. And we went to Vanderbilt to a specialist to get her tested again. And like, the doctor went right in and got the birth fluid and came right out. The first doctor stuck her. We went 2 times. He stuck her 3 times each time. And the 4th time on the 2nd time, I told him, no, doc, we're going to have to trust God on this. And God said, okay, let's see. You know, and like, anyway, long story short, day 10 came and passed, and like I was like, by this time I was trusting the process and I was trusting God, and I was like, God wouldn't do that to me, and if he did, he would do it so that I could help somebody else, and because he feels like I'm equipped to handle the task at hand. And day 10 came and left, and we decided not to abort the child because we didn't know. The short of it is I have a beautiful, healthy 3.5-year-old baby girl right now. I'm talking about I get to see the Spirit of God every morning she wakes up. She looks me in the eye and she says, Daddy, I love you. I get to put her to bed at night. I got a good mate that I've been with for 5 years and I've invested a lot of time and a lot of work in changing me and learning how to deal with her in a relationship, because I didn't know anything about being in a relationship with a woman before that. They were all unhealthy. You know, in the last year, since the baby came, we've been struggling. You know, she's got some sexual rape and abuse issues that are coming out in her spirit, and she's not able to, like, be there the way that I need her to be there. You know? And the 10th step is about continuing to check myself and check my spirit and check in with God. You know what I'm saying? And like the 11th step is about increasing God in my life and decreasing myself. The 11th step is about increasing my commitment to live by spiritual principles and live by what God wants for me and build that relationship on a deeper level. I'm talking about having a conscious contact with God. I'm talking about being able to tap in and be guided in any situation. Because what God wants for me is always better than what I want for myself. I just can't see it in the midst of the storm. Mm-hmm. And like she's going through these issues, and I'm going through my own issues, see, because I was abused, so I went the other way. I want to fuck all the time. You know what I'm saying? I validate myself and my manhood through how many women I sleep with, how often I have sex, how much they like it. You know? And like, I'm in this relationship and she's doing it when she don't want to. And like, I'm doing the same thing to her that I was doing to everybody else, and the same thing that was done to me, because she's not spiritually there. She's just physically there. And she don't want to do that. You know? So like, I was running on my treadmill about 2 weeks ago, and I was praying and meditating. It's funny how, like, when you're at a place in your life, you're always in that place in the steps too. You know, I had this 4-step assignment to write on relationships, and I wrote on relationships, and I saw who I am. And the fact that I'm a spiritual and physical being, you know what I'm saying? And I have needs and da-da-da. And like then I went into 11-step, and my sponsor's been on me about the 11-step for months. And I ain't wanted to pray and ask God because I already was scared of what the answer would be. I didn't want to trust the same God that saved my fucking life. The same God that gave me my dream, man. I didn't want to trust Him. But the pain got so great. We were messing around one Saturday morning, man, and she wasn't present, and I wasn't either. I'm talking about the spirit of our relationship was nowhere in sight. And it forced me into praying for God's will, for me and the power to carry it out. And I prayed for it for about a week. And I was running on the treadmill one Sunday night. And I got off of it, and I'd been on it about an hour, and I'd prayed, and I just shut up, turned the TV off, did my thing. And I went outside on my porch, and I looked up at the stars, and it happened to be a nice 70-degree night, and I was smoking a cigarette, and God shouted at me. He said, "Your reason and season's up. You need to get out of my way." I'm talking about I built a relationship with God that I no longer question Him. When He speaks in that kind of voice, the only choice I have is to be obedient. I made arrangements to move the next day, and within 3 days I was out. I'm talking about God had me give up my dream, man. Leave my dream. Just so that I could get free. And what I've come to find through praying the last 2-3 weeks is that God ain't having me give up my dream. God asked me to get out of the way so He could go to work instead of me. God asked me to get out of the way, man, because I was controlling my relationship and I was continuing to harm her. I'm talking about checking myself. And at the same time, through backing up and getting away, like, some of the spirit of who we are is coming back into our relationship. I'm talking about she called me last night and said, "I miss you." She ain't told me that in a long time, and I've been a lot of places, done a lot of things. I went and stayed at her house a couple nights last weekend, and we actually made love for the first time in 3 years. I'm talking about our spirits were there, man. God was doing His thing. Just from praying for the knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry it out. All I had to do was surrender. See, because God doesn't want me to have just a piece of a woman. He wants me to have all of her. He wants me to have everything my heart's desire. You know what I'm saying? My disease is saying, you at this convention, go pick you up a newcomer. Go substitute. But one more time, I got to be obedient even though my disease don't want me to. Because I know that God is in the midst of working this thing out. You know what I'm saying? In the 12th step, the real value is in being myself. I can't carry the message unless I'm living it. This podium is the lowest form of service for me. because won't none of y'all in 2 weeks remember what the fuck I shared. If you might remember one thing, but you ain't going to remember much of it, and it's not going to impact your life that much. But the people at home in Nashville that see me walk this path, my sponsees that call me and say, "Sponsor, I don't know how you're going through that the way you're going through it. And I believe in you." My sponsor that tells me that, like, he believes in me. And, like, he looks at me for how to live in a relationship some days. Because I've been to therapy, I've done every damn thing. Things worth having are worth fighting for. And just because God gives you something doesn't mean that you don't have to do a little more work to bring it where it needs to be. See, because my theory on relationships is God will bring me and somebody else that are compatible and close enough so that we can grow together as one. I don't want just a physical relationship. I don't want just an emotional or mental relationship. I want a spiritual relationship. And when I disrespect her, I disrespect the God in her and the God in me. And just for today, I'm surrendering to the God of my understanding and allowing her to be worked on by the God of her understanding and getting out of the way. You know, and the 12th step is about walking that path. It's about doing those things that are uncomfortable. It's about surrendering and getting out of the way. It's about being a beacon of light, an example of hope. It's about, first and foremost, never, ever, ever having to use any dope again. You know what I'm saying? And it's about change. This is not a drug program. It's a recovery program. And my 10-step question every day is, what am I recovering from today? What am I willing to do the work on today? Have I called my sponsor today? Have I got honest today? Because I can call my sponsor all day long and not tell him the truth. But I've learned that when I do, I shortchange him and I shortchange me. And I shortchange the people in my life because everything I do affects the other people in my life. Because I'm an example of the 12 steps. I live the program. Man, and if you're new in here and you're struggling with getting clean, just know, man, you can put it down. And it can stay down. But there's going to be more work to be done. And at every corner, there's a deeper level of surrender coming. We do the work today, not for the storm today, but for the storm that's yet to come. This is the toughest storm I've been through. But I know that God's preparing me for the next one, see, because I'm a soldier for God today. And I'm a soldier for Narcotics Anonymous. And this fucking disease ain't getting me. And it ain't getting anybody in my support group today. And if it's trying to get you, come see me. I'll help you beat it today. Because that's what the program's about. It's about loving and helping each other, not kicking each other and putting each other down. It's about fanning the flame of desire. It's about throwing some more gas on the fire so the flame can burn bright. It's not about shunning your head at that relapse that's been in and out the doors 25 times. That's the one that needs the help the most. Because he truly don't know how to do this way of life. I'm going to say this and I'm going to shut up. I got a sponsee that has relapsed 30 times. And I still believe he can get it. Because God brought me off that curb. When it's his turn, God will bring him too. I just got to be here to help him when God says it's his turn. Thanks for letting me share.
At this time, I'd like to present our second speaker, Francis.
Thank you. Hi, family. My name is Francis, and I'm an addict. Speaker statement. Yeah. Mic check, check. Thank you. Speaker statement. And all I had to do was leave my glasses. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is a possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts, recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories, because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. Thank you. My name is Francis, and I'm an addict. And I'd like to thank God for giving me another opportunity to be a part of this wonderful fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm from the Washington, D.C. area, and before I get started, this has been in my spirit for the last couple of days. And you coming back, baby? Okay. You want me back up some? Okay. I'm used to hollering in the streets of D.C. It's hard to be cool. You know what I'm saying? Trying to be, you know, can't see because I'm 52 now. You know, and trying to be professional up here to carry a clear message. And it's been in my spirit, and what I would like to do, because you all have given me an opportunity to be a part of this convention, is I would like to dedicate this moment, and for whomever that you might have had this experience in your area with, I'd like to dedicate my part of what I'm going to share for the next 15 minutes or so to Ready Teddy, who was a member, a grateful member of Narcotics Anonymous in the Washington metropolitan area. And he went on to hang out with the other NA angels a couple of weeks ago. And we had an opportunity last year to do Stand in the Relationship past the expiration date. You know, so if I could just take a moment, and those who you would like to reflect on, you take your moment, Carmelita, Mark Lyons, because the D.C. area, we're in a healing process right now. We're talking about the family that's suffering. The loved ones that we met at the anniversaries and the weddings, and they're part of our family. A moment of silence. Thank you. Now, I want to do a shout out for D.C. Is D.C. in the house? Yeah! Don't be hating. You know, I am definitely going to acknowledge the people that take care of me. I love you. Thank you. Because you know what? This is not Narcotics Anonymous idol. You know, like American Idol. And we're not here to be judged and who got the best tape and who can holler the loudest. And I appreciate what you said. Because the only thing that I've been able to give since I've been here, since the coma, since standing at the fire barrel, since shooting dope on a baby, for 9 months for turning my parents' house into an oil joint, from disrespecting people who cared about me, and when he did not allow me to, and I wanted to die, but he said he wasn't finished with me yet. And I kept getting upset with God because they was at the end, they was calling me OD Shorty. Because I was going out, boom, I was on prescription drugs while I was right. First it was Hennessy. And I'm moving a little bit too fast because for real, when it first started out with the dollar capsules, it was orange flip. How many people 50 and over in here? That's the orange flip crew. And he seemed fit to use a person like me. So it's not about, you know, this is a powerful, because they told me when I got here, even the addict with 24 hours got a message. So I'm being contradictive now when I'm coming in here and I'm trying to satisfy this extended family that God has given me, this extended dysfunctional family that God has given me. And I'm trying to satisfy a bunch of people who are dissatisfied themselves. Because we never get it. So if I could just reach one person, give me the one that you want to talk about. Because they keep doing the same thing over and over and over, expecting different results. That's me. Give me the one who need to look a certain way, because I think that looking a certain way, you might like me. Give me the one who's talk clean and live dirty. Give me her. Or him. Give me the one that will do. You said new. I do new, old, used, and somebody else's.
That's right.
Go ahead. Give me them. So I thank y'all for just giving me 15 minutes of y'all. Because this is about one addict sharing another. Our spirit speaks to each other. You might not be at the mic, but I can look and I can see me and you. If you're frowning up, I don't know if it's the new boots. I don't know if it's that you just left a meeting and you felt like you wasn't worthy to even be a part of Nonprofits Anonymous because somebody was up there telling you what you should be doing rather than allowing you to have your own process. I don't know whether you're here with somebody else's people. I don't. What do you want to do about your problem, and how do you think we can help? That's right. So, little girl, never feeling like I was worthy. Never liking me. And I, you know what? I'm not going to take a risk on this because I know deep down in here that the people that I've come in contact with, when I see them, what I received from them, I left something in them in my area. See, because I loved them where they were. So you call it popular. I call it love. So you can be traveling, you can be a good speaker, you can make people laugh, jump, do flips, whatever, but if you ain't striving to love and be compassionate, you ain't doing nothing. And it's a good feeling when you come to a convention and you balled up in knots. Because life just deal you your cards, because it's just your time. And before you can get down the hall, somebody, come here, give me a hug. Come here, give me a hug. Come here, give me. I've just been hugging so much, my body hurting. You know, and I ask for what I want. Because I will not allow a bunch of people to tell me that I don't have a message to carry. Even if it's the one that might not be pleasing to you. That little girl would do anything to be accepted. And when I hit that love thing, I was talking about being over there in the projects, and I wanted to be white. You laughing. Figure that out. You know why? Because I seen the love that the teacher was giving my little white friend. And when I came home from school, I asked my mother, I said, why she not giving me that attention? So I got a disease of attention. Have you ever just looked for attention in all the places? You know, come on, don't try. You dye your hair, you wear a red wig, you put on purple lipstick. You know, attention. See me, the loudest one in the block, in the beer garden. Oh, that's the drinking place. We call it the beer garden. You know, the beer garden. You know, just like all joint, I forgot that that's a crack house. I don't want nobody to identify out. Don't identify. Don't go nowhere. Don't let us scare you. That meant that I used something because I had to get it in me. You know, because I didn't want to feel. But you know what? I'm so glad when I got here, they said, we don't care nothing about your race, your creed, your sexual identity. All we want to know is what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. Because then I found out that prejudice is in black people, too. Okay, somebody will get that going back over the bridge. And I used to be an exhibitionist. I used to take off my clothes. But today, I have an unwelcome partner, and her name is Minna. Menopause. Is that what it is? Where you get the hot flashes?
Yeah.
Woo, baby. She mean. She just like that one that used to wake me up and say, it's time to call. You be trying to watch television. She said, I don't know what you acting like. That's the family. You got to go get you some dope. You can try to act like you sitting around the Christmas tree with your toys and your baby if you want to. But you're going to sell that one that the daddy bought, and you're going to get you some dope. Menopause show up without your permission. And I'm so deep with the steps, guess what? I'm working the first step to the bitter end because I'm powerless. It ain't nothing I can do about it but welcome her, just like I do my disease. Just welcome it. Because I didn't think I was even going to be alive. So I done moved on, and me and my little girlfriend, we playing, and we having a good time, and we done got on the other side of town, and I was always addicted to the lifestyle before I was the drugs. And I used to go right around the corner and peep and, you know, see the bright lights and so forth and so on. And I got pregnant, and, you know, because I'm going to move. And then when I got pregnant in the summer, but I heard the message from a radio talk show host. And he had a summer program in the neighborhood where he was bringing a program for the little children in the neighborhood. and me and my girlfriends was doing what we do. You know, smoking marijuana in the bathroom. You know, thank God I'm a productive member of society today. That's what they're talking about. You know, cleaning up to go back. You know, we're talking about harm here, to go back, not just in the rooms. Because I don't know about you, but it's always so comfortable to start my list with the past and forget about the present people that I've hurt in the rooms. And I heard it, and he caught me, and when I got back around here the next day to go play, you know, do my little, he said, come in. And he said, I need you to help these children. So I was introduced to what drugs would do and what alcohol would do in the summer of 68. And my disease said, get on the television and tell the little children what drugs would do, and get your little $80 check and go get a dollar capsule. It'll help you talk better. And then I come in here and I put on a mask and make you think I don't have a mental illness. I can dress mental illness up so good that you'll have enough confidence to believe I'm sane. Can anybody identify? Yeah. Look, the whole room stood up. You know what I'm saying? And then I got pregnant. And I was running through alleys. You know, like my neighborhood in here. Like people who raised me, who took care of me, who, you know, I thank God, because I'm telling you, I had such an unwilling, your spirit was willing to share. You said you was riding with Andre down here, and he was abusing your disease all the way from Tennessee. We whispering and having fun up here. I just met him. And you had a willing spirit. I have been not wanting to be here. Didn't check in. They said, we seen you. We already marked you off, dope fiend. My sponsor, Lisa, said, Pat, we had to help me. Joan called me. We down here. You know, come on. You know what I'm saying? And it talk about this sometimes not being willing and needing people to just say, come on. And I ran into somebody in the hall. She said, you felt like that too. I made excuses. It started raining. I said, I got him. I ain't going. And the sun came out. And I just wanted to thank them. I thought about them. You know, thank you, Boosie. Thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you, neighborhood. Thank you, sponsees. Thank you. So, I didn't want this child. When I got in the, because, of course, they tried to give me some more help. And they put me in D.C. General, which is a hospital in Washington, D.C., and I found somebody just like me. It's amazing how we can always hook up with people just like us when we're trying to do something different. We're trying to do something different. It's amazing how you can find somebody that's like you, that's going opposite of what it is that you need to be doing. And I hooked up with somebody. And I'm still paranoid, thinking they're talking about me. So I'm like, and I'm nosy too. I'm like, you know, what y'all talking about? Time me, make sure I don't. Thank you, Angel. Okay, a little before that. And so I hooked up. Thank you. Thank you. I need that. I'm not going to pretend that every now and then I go in and out. I'll be having a conversation with you, and I'll switch on you in a minute if you can't keep up with me. You do that. Switch up on you in a minute. And I'll be like, I left that conversation 15 minutes ago, Mike. What's up? You know. And when I went to have, they was trying to make sure the baby wouldn't be born with drugs in the system. And I met somebody, and we climbed out the window. And they put a police at the back of the window. Mental illness. This disease, mental, physical, and spiritual. Death. Threefold disease. And so, of course, you know what happened. It escalated. And it wasn't until I kept overdosing and I got in touch with a doctor who said, I see something in you. And, of course, they looked at me because at this time I had began using intravenous drugs in my pulses. I began overdosing. I'm one of those people that the physical took a toll on me. Some of my inner body parts had to be removed as a result of this disease. And I'm sharing because they tell us that it's a new person in here. And they said the only way a new person is going to be able to identify is that we share our experience. I ain't giving you a war story because I, war story. I'm just telling you how the disease just progressed. And the last one was the coma. So I surrendered. And I would hear people come and bring the message of recovery to the facility. They say that our message is carried in institutions and jails and hospitals and places where people can't get out. And you all bought the message, and I wanted what you had. Just the hope. I wasn't impressed with your things because I was always a dressed up garbage can. Jeans wasn't but $2 in the thrift store. You know what I'm saying? I used to get the bandanas and tie them around my arm and tie them around my neck and, you know, match. And at the end of the night, the wig be turned inside out in my pocketbook and the bandana be tied around a blood stain. I mean, Mama always said, make sure you clean. You know. So, but it was what you had. You had a freedom. And I wanted it. I didn't want the swollen hands and the neck that I couldn't turn because at this time I had started using in parts of my body because things were burnt out. And my doctor, I don't even remember his name. He was a hit doctor in the street. He didn't have a degree. He just had big hands and he could hit. Those were people I entrusted in. And then you said to me, just come in here and just sit. I'm so glad they didn't stop a bunch of steps and traditions and don't act this way and don't be this way. I could barely hold a sentence when I got here. I was gone. Emotionally, I was a wreck. And the people in my area allowed me to the best of their ability because what I found out is I was asking a bunch of emotionally unavailable people to take care of me. But there were times when somebody would go up a little bit. You know what I'm saying? That's why we ain't all here at the same place at the same time. We recover in various degrees, and thank God for that. Because the fifth step says that healing can only take place when I get a glimpse and look at you. That's fifth step. It took me a while to do the fourth step. My first sponsor, Sandy's in here. And she would have me do 12-step calls over to jail and go with her. And, you know, I was spitting up. I was sick. And she held on to me. And I thank God for that. As I continue to stay around this program, I got so miserable because no longer was the relationships working. The clothes was no longer working. The abusing people from the podium all in the name of I'm sharing and taking a shot at you. And I heard you go into the ninth step asking God, and I had to ask God to forgive me for the way I had been treating my NA people. And what happened, that personal inventory, and when I'm wrong, promptly admitted it. And it's amazing how if you think that you got a workshop and you got a step and you act like you didn't forget, I just had to do that today. What I did differently was I allowed the person to talk. Because my normal, like it says in our literature, my normal reaction is I'm going to try to make me right by any means necessary. And I had to learn how to begin to start taking care of me. Because oftentimes we look for people to start taking care of us, and when we can't take care of people, they begin to get a resentment because we learn to take care of ourselves. I'm talking about the sponsees that all of a sudden you don't have a crisis. Well, I've been on my job for 20 years, and Tuesday they told me, we no longer need your help. Thank God for people who have showed me how to live, because when they finished telling me that, they said, oh, and by the way, we're going to pay you for a whole year. But right now, you're on administrative leave. With a 401k plan, plus we got a little project going for you in case you want to look for another job, because your seniority can bump somebody else. But I've been, oh, that was like whoop-de-doo 3 days ago when it happened, but the human part of me fits that in. So now let me get to my God so I can move on, so I can thank y'all for giving me an opportunity after having a spiritual awakening as a result of living these principles rather than talking them. That all of a sudden, it got so dark in this addict's life that I cried out. And I said, I can't do it. I'm tired of the surgeries. I'm tired of the family members killed, shot. I'm tired of the son. I'm tired. I'm tired of the father dying on my birthday. I'm tired of sleeping with people, trying to get them to fill this void. I'm tired of this spirit of desperation and this scent of desperation that when I enter a room, you can smell it. I'm tired. And I said something so powerful. God, help me.
That's it. Yes. That's it.
He said, how do you want it? I said, in my time. He said, your time is up. Because I've allowed you to come in and try to help people in areas where you were emotionally dead at. But because they put a title on you and said you were a sponsor, and they asked you to share a couple of conventions, you forgot what your purpose was for coming here. So I'm tired of you impressing you because you're not impressing another addict. Why? Because they're doing the same thing you're doing. So it just feels very comfortable, like you're a pattern. I want you to change some of your patterns. And if you just move back a little teeny bit, I'm going to come in and sit with you.
That's it.
Now, you know what? It's amazing how we confuse new people or old people. Do you know that prayer and meditation, when we stand our literature says that we are praying and meditating when we stand in as a community. I thought I had to be still and be praying and, you know, go through the, no. And now he just wakes me up with my without my permission. 3 o'clock in the morning, I need to talk to you. I just want to check in with you. Today you said something and it disturbed me. You trusted another person before you trusted me. Why you keep relying on those people all the time? When the last time you got on your knees? You got too many shoes to get on your knees and try to get down there and look at your shoes. Because you've been shopping to your feelings. I want to ask you why you bouncing checks. Uh-oh, I'm sorry. I want to ask you why your car almost getting ready to be repossessed. I want to ask you why you got a spirit of jealousy in your spirit that you can't even go and really embrace that person who just bought something new because you keep comparing you with that newness. I want to ask you, who really are you really giving all the credit to? Is it the things, your creature comforts? How much time you really spending with me? And why aren't you not turning down some of these engagements? You can't hear me if you talking. Close it out. And so, having had my spirit woke, he has done some things for me. I refinanced, paid all my bills up, then lost the job. You know what I'm saying? Carrying the message to children, the ones that I lied to on television, that's what I do. 6 years sexually abused, beat at 3 and 4 years old. He said, I got something bigger for you. I already had it, already set up for you, but you have to do this kind of thing to do this kind of thing. So I don't know what I'd do without y'all. So please don't let the spirit of intimidation intimidate you to make you feel like you ain't working on nothing at this convention. Because every last one of us sitting in here is working on something. Even if it's just showing up for the sister or the brother sitting beside you. Thanks for letting me share.